Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Anne-Marie Shoemaker. This story is epic no matter how you approach it. Anne-Marie's fertility process was a long road involving surgery, multiple rounds of IUIs, and a devastating miscarriage. The birth itself included persistent back labor, stalling for hours at 8 centimeters, and a long pushing stage. And yet, holding her miracle baby released all her previous feelings of brokenness and fear. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Storyworth, helping you and your loved ones collect, preserve, and pass on your memories while getting to know each other in a whole new way. To learn more and receive $20 off your first purchase, visit storyworth.com/birthful. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by CauseBox, a quarterly limited edition subscription box curated to showcase products that are ethical, sustainable, and with a positive mission to give back. Go to causebox.com and use the code Birthful30 to get 30% off your first box. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show. And if what you hear is helpful, make sure you subscribe. It's free, and that way you won't miss a thing. You can also support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Storyworth and CauseBox. And another way to support the podcast is by becoming an official Birthful patron at patreon.com/birthful. And as a thank you, patrons get access to extra content for each episode, as well as access to ad-free episodes. And for example, for this episode, that would mean extra audio content where Anne-Marie talks about her postpartum challenges, what she's been going through, along with a fabulous exercise handout given to her by her doulas that helped her and her husband rank their postpartum priorities. Come join us at patreon.com/birthful. All right. Now, last week I told you we are preparing for our massive 5-year celebration here of the podcast, and I asked you to tell me about your favorite guests. Today, I'm going to tell you to save the date because December 26th, I will be going on Facebook Live to officially begin the celebration at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. On that day, I'm going to be letting you know about all the amazing giveaways that we're going to have throughout the month of January, along with how to get in on the fun. And I will also be doing the first giveaway right that evening among those who show up to join me live for that Facebook video. So do come join me in celebrating 5 years of conversations with amazing guests and new parents. Meet me at facebook.com/birthful for a Facebook Live on December 26th at 8 p.m. Oh, and that's 8 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, so my guest today is Anne-Marie Shoemaker, and her pregnancy journey began with quite the rocky fertility journey, and I wanted to give you a warning that this includes a miscarriage, so she is going to be talking about that. Also, Anne-Marie's faith played a large role in getting her through all of this, and so it is a theme that comes up throughout the show. We all experience and practice spirituality a little bit differently, so I hope that whatever your beliefs, you can still appreciate and listen to the story. And if by chance the word God is not your cup of tea, then feel free to mentally substitute it for whatever word better resonates with you. All right, here we go. Anne-Marie, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for wanting to share your story. And before we get into it, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I am now a mom and a wife, and I live in Winston-Salem, North Carolina with my husband and my son, and big lover of travel, absolutely love to travel. My family is very international. My parents were immigrants to the United States, so I have family all over the world.
And where did they come from?
Yeah, so I'll summarize that very shortly, that they came from Argentina. by Europe. So they started off in Europe, and then during World War II, both sides ended up in Argentina. And then my parents ended up here. So we have family all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to Argentina?
I have a couple of times, and absolutely beautiful. Of course, the time that I went was summer here, winter there. So it was a little cold and dreary on some days, but it was a lot of fun.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one of the, I've been to many countries in South America and Latin America, but that's one that I've never gotten to. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, well, I know.
Make a point. Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. Cool. It's a great place to go.
I hear that. Yeah. And so you are a mom, and how old is your kid right now?
Oh, yeah. My son, Harrison, is 15 weeks today, so 3.5 months, and he is just amazing. We love him so much.
Oh, you're just stepping out of that fourth trimester.
Yes. Yeah. And sleep deprivation is starting to wane a little bit now, thankfully. It's getting a little bit better.
Oh, excellent. So let's take you back to way more than 2 years ago, when your journey towards becoming a mom started. Tell me what was going on.
Yeah. So it was December of 2015 that I stopped taking the pill. That was kind of my, all right, we're going to start on this journey to try to see if we can have a baby. And my husband and I got married in September of 2013. So we've been married for a couple of years and thought, all right, let's just go ahead and see what happens. Not really trying, so to speak, just stop taking the pill. We started doing more serious trying probably mid to late 2016, where it's like, okay, nothing has happened yet. Let's do more ovulation testing and see if we can time this better. Still in early 2017, no baby. Told my gynecologist at that time, whenever I just went in for my checkup, that, you know, I was a little concerned that it had been a while and we still haven't gotten pregnant. And I knew the average was a year, and here we were over a year and still really no baby. And at that time, that gynecologist essentially said, the average is 2 years. And she said, my philosophy is to wait at least 2 years, as that is the average, before doing any kind of testing whatsoever. And it just didn't sit well with me. I felt like I was being very transparent about how I was concerned that nothing was moving forward and that we had waited over a year and everything else said, you know, after a year, you really should talk to a doctor. And it felt dismissive, in my opinion. So I pushed, and she agreed to only really do a thyroid test. And of course, that came back normal. And after chatting with my husband, still no baby, come October of 2017, so almost 2 years at that point since I'd been off the pill, I said, I just don't think that she's the right provider for me. There was just that women's intuition. I don't know how else to describe it other than that, of I think something is wrong. And nobody had ever said that. I didn't really have any outward signs that something was wrong. It was just that innate, I don't think this is going to be easy for us. And so my husband and I agreed that, you know what, let's go ahead and dig deeper. And I switched practices completely to another practice that has an infertility specialist. She's an OBGYN, but she specializes in infertility. So November of 2017, I remember that first appointment where I just felt like she heard me. I've heard a lot, you know, on this podcast, even of other people saying how important it is to have a voice, to feel like you're being listened to, that somebody gets it and doesn't dismiss you. And that was her. She sat down with us, I think, for an hour that day and walked us through her game plan of trying to investigate what was going on. The blood test that she recommended we go ahead and even start that day. From that testing, we figured out that I was likely someone who had endometriosis, which I'd never considered because I didn't feel like I had a ton of outward signs. But it turns out that I did. She recommended at that point because of the blood test that to confirm endometriosis that she actually recommended surgery. And it was that shock to the system, right? Of, oh my gosh, you know, we just started this process like 2 weeks ago and now I'm going in for surgery.
Well, she wasn't wasting any time, right?
She was not. She took me very seriously. She wasted no time. So literally December of 2017, I went in for, under general anesthesia and did a laparoscopic surgery, and they confirmed I have endometriosis. And I had endometrium all over the place. It wasn't super severe, but it was just, it's just enough that even this little bit of endometrium, little specks of it in different places, can cause problems for women to get pregnant. So they had to clean it all out. They literally cauterize. They cut it off and cauterize the wounds of where the endometrium is, that where it should be. And then you recover for, you know, a couple of weeks and essentially can start trying. And one thing that she had told us before we even went into the surgery, that once with someone who has endometriosis, the best opportunity to get pregnant is within 6 months of the surgery. And it's because anyone who has it, the endometrium will continue to grow back where it shouldn't be throughout until menopause, essentially, unless you're pregnant or breastfeeding. So she recommended that if we had a couple of rounds of trying naturally, which was our best bet, she thought at that point, that if that didn't work, that we should really more aggressively pursue pregnancy. So we did 2 rounds of just trying to get pregnant on our own. Didn't work. So at that point, we tried doing Clomid, and the Clomid alone did not work. Next round, we did Clomid and went ahead and jumped in and did intrauterine insemination. Didn't work. And finally, in late April of 2018, we did Clomid with a trigger shot so that it times the IUI procedure, where you ovulate the same day, the same time, essentially, that you go in and do the IUI. And that took. And I remember getting that positive pregnancy test. And it brings tears to my eyes now. Just the being floored of, I can't believe this is finally real. Just finally seeing those two pink lines. And utterly thrilled. We were ecstatic. Utterly ecstatic.
Aww. I can imagine, like, already you've been at this nearly 2.5 years and all these rounds, and that I'm sure that 6 month deadline was kind of in your head and
looming,
right? And then boom, it happened. Oh, that's so exciting.
It was.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. I have the best memories of getting together during the holidays with my extended family when I was a kid. And just in cousins alone, we count 15 people. Now, of course, at some point we would end up around the table listening to adults swap and relive moments together. But now that we are spread all over the globe, keeping these memories alive can be really difficult. If these stories are not retold and written down, they get forgotten. So that's why giving the gift of StoryWorth can be one of the most meaningful things you can give this year. StoryWorth lets you stay in touch and bond with your family through your stories, no matter your geographic location, by providing lively discussion topics online. Here's how it works. Every week, StoryWorth emails your family member a different story prompt with questions you've never thought to ask, like, what are some of your favorite smells? Or how has your life turned out differently than what you imagined it would? They simply reply to that email with their story, and they're able to include photos as well. All stories are private, and they're only shared with whom you choose, and you can invite an unlimited number of people to receive the email responses, like maybe your 15 cousins. After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile every answered question and photo you choose to include into a beautiful keepsake book that's shipped for free. Simple as that. They get a question, reply with an answer, share with as many people as they want, repeat that for a year, edit if needed, and receive a hardcover keepsake book. StoryWorth has a bunch of great prompt questions for you to choose from, or you can create your own. Preserve and pass on memories with StoryWorth, the most meaningful gift for your family. Sign up today by going to storyworth.com/birthful and you'll get $20 off your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/birthful for $20 off. And we're back talking with Anne-Marie about her the pregnancy journey so far, right?
Right.
And you are just right, you know, you're in a fantastic space that after so much effort and wishes and hopes, you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we went in. So this doctor does a 7-week ultrasound. Just to confirm everything looks good, especially for her infertility patients. And so we went in for the 7-week ultrasound, and it was a devastating day. We found out in that ultrasound that we had lost our first child to a miscarriage. And a lot of grieving, as you can imagine. Just the, I think anyone who goes through a miscarriage just has that experience of what did I do? What did I do wrong? And could I have done something different? I had to have a DNC a week later. And that was difficult on me. That whole week was a really hard process for me. But it was that morning that really probably the day before that I realized that was the last 24 hours I was going to get to have, even holding my baby in me, the closest physically I would ever be to that child ever again was in that last 24-hour period. And my DNC was scheduled for June 7th. And that's important, that date, for a reason. I'll get to that. So we had the DNC. And I needed some time, obviously, to grieve. And it was a while later that my husband really was my encourager in, you know what, we need to, let's try to get back on the bandwagon, not to dismiss that child that we believe was our first child, 100%. But just that we wanted to be parents, and we knew, unfortunately, that our window was closing to try to have a baby without maybe having to do surgery all over again. So it was a really difficult thing for me to think through all of that process of, I still felt like I was grieving my child. And
right.
Then also having to jump in again. And it was just a lot.
So much. And I am so sorry for your experience and the loss of that child. What were within that grieving process? Because I think miscarriage is something we don't talk very much about.
Right.
What were things that were helpful, if anything? Yeah. And what, you know, how did you give yourself some time to grieve and maybe anything to memorialize this child?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Yeah, a couple of things. One, my faith is huge for me and my husband. And I remember my husband and I, this was a big evening for me. We went for a walk probably a month after my DNC. And I just broke down in tears on that walk that evening and just said that I felt like I was broken, that I couldn't get pregnant on my own, and that I lost that baby. What if it was the caffeine? What if it, you know, whatever it was, like, what if I shouldn't have gone on that bike ride through the woods, that, you know, maybe it was too much jostling? And my husband just stopped me. And there was this beautiful sunset. And he said, I need you to look at the sky and realize that the God of the universe who painted that sky has our future in his hands. And it's a good beautiful, bright future, just like that sunset. And this is not your fault. And that was huge for me. Just to hear my husband tell me that, still feeling that I was not whole, I guess, still feeling broken in some way, but just knowing that he didn't view it that way. And I did read a book that was so encouraging for me. If anybody else would want to maybe read that too, and it's called As Far as the Curse is Found. Also for somebody that went through infertility, miscarriage, and she did interviews with people who also had stillbirths, and it was just so good for me to go through that book. But to memorialize our baby, we also planted my husband's idea as well, a rose bush in front of our house. And I love that every May now it blooms, which is right whenever I was still carrying that first child. And now I even with my son, we get to walk around and see that rose bush. And I've told my son on our walks outside that that's for my son's older sibling. And I love that he had that idea. And I also have a necklace that my husband encouraged me to get that I still wear. That's a little nest with a little egg. And I love that symbolism to me of an egg that never hatched that I still carry with me.
Yeah, and they're so important. And I think the fact that your husband reminded you and believed and told you that it wasn't your fault, like those right. are powerful words. And then he gave yes. you hope.
Yes, exactly. My husband has been my rock. And then the funny side of grief, which I have actually different people I've talked to about miscarriage. A lot of people have done this before. Where you sometimes make maybe unwise decisions during that phase. I have a friend of mine who bought all new furniture for her entire house, which she now regrets. We booked a trip and decided we were going to pull the trigger on a trip to Ireland to celebrate what would be our 5-year wedding anniversary in September. And my husband said in late August that, you know, what if we go ahead and try this round in September before our trip happens. And then if it doesn't work, you know, we have this beautiful 2-week trip in Ireland to take our minds off of it. And we celebrate our 5-year wedding anniversary. And then we can figure out if we want to try again whenever we get back. And I said, okay, let's do it.
And that doesn't yeah. sound like an unwise decision, Anne-Marie. I'm still trying to figure out what was the unwise part of it.
I guess pulling the trigger on, it was very, spontaneous.
Gotcha.
And I am not not often a spontaneous person. I'm very type A. So the spontaneity of that, but it actually probably, yes, it ended up being a very wise decision to pull that trigger. So we booked the tickets for what was supposed to be the 15th of September, which was our 5-year anniversary date. And the way things fell was to do another round of IUI, same thing, Clomid, trigger shot, IUI on the 14th of September. Then a hurricane hit North Carolina and messed up our travel plans a little bit. And we ended up having to move our flight to the same day as the IUI. Talk about a crazy day. We got up, I guess, at 6 in the morning, did the IUI. And I thought, there's no way this is going to work. I thought, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this trip. I remember about a weekend, I told my husband, we were on this beautiful country drive, that I felt like the dark cloud of grief that I had been carrying with me everywhere seemed to have lifted on that trip. Just being in nature and seeing gorgeous countrysides and cliffsides and ocean, it was phenomenal. And I felt like I could breathe again for the first time. It was at the end of that trip, our last full day, I took that pregnancy test, really not thinking it could have worked. And it was positive. And that's when it was a very different experience. The first time I got a positive test with our first child, it was utter elation. This time, as excited as I was, the overwhelming emotion was fear. and that I was going to lose this child too. And I don't think I fully anticipated that, but that's what it was. And those feelings of my body can't do this came flooding back. That we got back and we had our 7-week ultrasound, and there was a healthy, thriving baby. Which was amazing. It was so amazing to see. But we realized at that time that that child's due date was June 7th, which is the same day that I had the DNC and the last day I held my first child within my body. And I could just see how that date didn't have to be filled with grief. That in and of itself to me was just, I felt like God was giving me this gift of, I'm here with you and I'm going to walk this with you through to your due date. It was a really, really amazing thing for me.
Did that sign help lift the fear and the worry that this wasn't going to happen?
You know, I wish I could say it fully did. No, it was more, it gave me comfort in that my God cared about me enough to walk it with me, no matter what. That he cares enough to care about the dates, the details in my life, that he, no matter what would happen, I was not alone. And yeah.
Did you happen to listen to the episodes with Parijat Deshpande? Because she's a high-risk fertility expert, high-risk pregnancy expert, sorry, who has gone through incredible IVF journeys herself. And so she's all about, like, I'm going to put on the show links, show notes links to her episodes. And she also has a book called Pregnancy Brain. And it's all about that, like the intense, that you saw these two lines of your baby, of being pregnant. And your overwhelming feeling was, my body can't do this.
Yeah.
And having to deal with that stress and the anxiety of pregnancy because you're in such a vulnerable space.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I did listen to that episode. And I remember thinking she was spot on. But there's not a way to separate joy with fear and grief. That there was another episode that I'm blanking on who it was, that you had a guest, that she said that you could experience grief and joy simultaneously, that it is possible to have both.
We are complex human beings. Yes, we do not or. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And I feel like I had probably that whole first trimester, it was the mixture of terror, fear, utter elation, joy, love for this baby, love for my first child, grief over my first. It was all there. All of it was there. And I spent my entire first trimester just trying to focus on getting through the first trimester. Just the emotions of the first trimester. I didn't plan for labor. I didn't plan, like, unlike my first pregnancy where it was like I got pregnant and I immediately was thinking about the birth and I went immediately to the end. With this pregnancy, I was just very focused on the here and now and loving every moment of carrying that child in my body and just trying to soak it up and love every second.
That sounds like a great advice, though, in general, for all the moments in life. Let's take another quick break. And when we come back, let's jump into this labor.
Labor.
Yeah. I just got the Cosbox Winter Box, and it is oh so good. The products inside are of impeccable quality, ethical and sustainable, with a positive mission to give back. And the remarkable part is that, thanks to their business model, the products inside are more than 70% off of retail. CauseBox is a quarterly subscription box, and every box is limited edition. The last four boxes sold out within days of release, and the current winter box seems to be the best one yet, with over $275 worth of items that you only pay $50 for. In my winter box, I got a mix and match earring set that Annika has already taken possession of, an exclusively designed set of two mugs, a daily hair vitamin product, and a face primer. Now, usually members would get to choose between a jewelry box, gold-plated serving spoons, or convertible mittens, but I was able to check out all three, and thanks to the included magazine that tells the stories behind the products, I learned that the jewelry box is made of a premium, sustainable, plant-based vegan leather, and that the super soft mittens are made from recycled plastic. On top of all that, the winter box included a gorgeous woven throw blanket, custom-made for CauseBox, that in itself retails for $120. The actual boxes are designed by independent female artists, so even discovering that design is exciting and lets you know that there is certainly something special inside. It can feel like getting a huge bundle of gifts. With the holiday season not far away, this is another reason that makes CauseBox an amazing gift for that person who's so hard to shop for. It's like giving them a bundle of gifts, literally. Right now, Birthful listeners can go to CauseBox.com and use the code BIRTHFUL30 to get 30% off their first box. So go get the winter CauseBox before it sells out. I can tell you firsthand, you're going to love it. CauseBox.com and use the code BIRTHFUL30 to get 30% off. And we are back talking to Anne-Marie about her, well, now we're in your pregnancy journey. You survived the first trimester.
Yes.
Being mindful about every moment of it. And was there anything eventful for second trimester?
No. We just had wonderful 18-week ultrasound, found out we were having a boy. I was right. My husband was wrong. He guessed girl. I was at that point really in full swing of, you know what, let's start planning for this birth. And it was then that I decided, as much as I loved my doctor, my infertility doctor, I was at a practice that had 10 physicians. And I knew that as much as I loved my doctor, there was a 1 in 10 chance that I was going to get that doctor on my Labor Day. And I wasn't a huge fan of a couple of the other doctors that I was going through a rotation with to meet them. I just felt like they were okay with me wanting a natural labor and delivery, but weren't fully supportive. They were invested into the natural labor and delivery. I was more being a little bit tolerated in that versus fully supported.
Oh, and that's such a huge distinction of finding a provider that is supportive and not just tolerant. And I hear that a lot with like VBACs is a good example. But with just any, whatever your wishes are. Yes. Finding the right right match.
It's huge. And kind of going back to that feeling a bit broken, really broken, that my body couldn't get pregnant on its own, couldn't carry my first child. I felt very strongly that I really wanted to do labor on my own. And I wanted to see what my body could do and allow it to do this one thing of giving birth without needing to have interventions. I really wanted that. So I made the hard decision to switch. I was 20 weeks pregnant, so halfway through my pregnancy at this point, and made the decision to switch to another practice that actually was 30 minutes away, but they were highly recommended to me, and it's midwives. Three midwives there at this practice, and I met with the head midwife there before even switching and just kind of shared and kind of did an interview process. You have a great podcast, and I'm forgetting who it was with, but it was about choosing the right provider. and kind of questions to ask about the whenever you go in with a provider.
Yeah.
To yeah, and Robin,
it was Robin Elise Weiss, and I'll link it in the show notes too. Yeah.
Perfect. Ugh. Yeah, and spot on, right? So to go in and find the right provider. She was phenomenal. Just answered all my questions exactly. I didn't even have to ask all the questions that I had on my list that day. And yes, I had a list because I'm that person. But she...
I got to tell you though, as a doula, I love when people come in with lists. I love the list because it means you're invested and you've done your homework and you have things that, you know, needs that need to be met. So it's a way of finding that we are a good fit. Yes.
Exactly. No. And she was able to answer most of my questions without me even asking. She just volunteered them. And so everything was checked off the list and I switched over to them. Had a phenomenal pregnancy, really. No issues. There was a slight risk, really, really light early on where my baby was breech for a little while, but flipped. Spinning babies was huge for me. So I did, especially when I found out my baby was breech. I'm like, okay, we are doing all the inversions. We are doing the whole nine. Let's get this baby in the right position. I did a lot of yoga and water aerobics, which I was literally the youngest person in the water aerobics pool, but that's okay.
You know, funny story is I did the same thing and it was the best feeling because the buoyancy that the water provides and you're like moving your whole body. Yeah, I loved it.
It was great. And also all the older ladies that were part of that water aerobics class, they were so much fun. And they, of course, gave you words of wisdom and it was great. Flash forward to Labor Day. So baby's coming. Everything's been going great. I did have a group of doulas. So I decided to go with a doula practice that has four doulas and got to know the three that I guess would be the most likely ones that would be on call during that around my due date. And got to know them throughout my pregnancy. I hired them pretty early in my pregnancy so that I could really, starting second trimester, so that I could get to know them well and feel really comfortable with them, which I think is really big. And when that, there was a shift. It was June 3rd. And that morning, I had been having already for really my whole third trimester, had been having Braxton and Hicks contractions. But something was different that day. I feel like I woke up that morning and I wasn't in pain, but the contractions just seemed different. Maybe a little bit more uncomfortable, a little bit more like menstrual cramping. And so I texted my doulas and I was like, you know, this is what's going on. You know, I'm not sure what's going on. I am having some brown, I'm going to be blunt, but I think I appreciated it. Whenever women are blunt on here, so I'll be blunt. I was having some brownish discharge that morning, which I hadn't had before. And they said, well, yeah, it could be early labor. You could stay that way for a few days. Because at this point, I wasn't due until the 7th. So very close, but wasn't sure if that was going to be the day or not. So I literally worked all day. It was a Monday and I worked the whole day. Kind of got through it. And I do feel like my body was kind of purging. I used the bathroom multiple times that day and thought, and I know from doing my research that maybe was another sign that labor could be coming on. And then around 5 o'clock, I went for a 2.5 mile walk. And it was at that point that my contractions picked up. And at 6:30 that day is when I was actually driving the car. My husband and I went to go pick up some takeout. And I was driving. I was in the parking lot, pulling in, and a contraction hit that hurt. And I stopped the car, and I said, you're going to need to drive home. So that's essentially where I'd say my labor kind of started, was that first painful contraction. Even though I knew I was in labor, early labor throughout the day, it wasn't really painful until that point. Texted with my doulas at 9:15 that my contractions were like about 10 minutes apart. They told me, you know, just try to relax, try to get some sleep. because it was in the evening. I tried to as best that I could, got a shower, shaved my legs, the important things in life. I didn't know when the next time would be that I would get to do that. So I did that, was in the tub for a while, but my contractions were really starting to hurt. And I texted with my doula, the one that at that point it was like, okay, she's in labor. And so my doula Christian was the one that was going to be with me through my labor. And I let her know at that point that my pain at 1:30 a.m. was severe. And my contractions had actually, I felt like they had slowed down a little bit. They were still like about 7-8 minutes apart. But the intensity of those contractions had picked up. And I actually have a quote from one of those texts. I said, I'm having severe back pain at this point with my contractions. And the pain remains while waiting for the next one. I'm averaging 5 minutes, 40 seconds between contractions. I've been averaging that for the last hour. And she told me later that it was really that text that she knew this is going to be a back labor mama. And
as a back labor mama myself, yeah. Oh, I can relate to that. Because that situation where the back labor stays with or without contractions, that is a special kind of back labor hell. Because it doesn't happen, like, you could, more often than not, you get back labor, but it still subsides in between contractions. It doesn't, like, yeah, congratulations. It's a more rare type of back labor. It's brutal.
Yeah, and the tricky thing, too, at that point, because they, you know, were telling me try to rest as much as I could. There was no resting happening. Because there was no relaxing between contractions. And
did any of them suggest doing, like, position changes, trying to get baby to move? Yeah. What were suggestions?
Yoga ball movements, trying to kind of on the bed, lean forward. A lot of it too was, they were very encouraging of whatever intuitively felt right to go with it. And one of the biggest things for me is anytime I tried to lay down on my side or on my back or any type of down position was excruciating. I had to stay upright the entire time. And I think that was one of the hardest parts of labor for me. Well, in addition to the excruciating back pain, was the fact that I couldn't not be up. I had to be up. Or it made everything worse. So I don't remember a whole lot of, I'll just be frank, I don't remember a whole lot of what position changes my doula had me do once we got to the hospital, but she had me moving in different positions. I think I was in full pain labor land that they just moved me and I just did whatever they told me to do to make it work. I called my midwife at 3:45 in the morning. And my doula did ask, you know, do you need me to come to you? And that was probably around 3. And I said, I think at this point, we're getting close to me needing to go to the hospital. I think I'm doing okay. Let's just plan to have you meet me there whenever I am ready to go. And I texted my midwife at 3:45 a.m., let her know I was about 4.5 minutes apart. And she said, as my hospital was about 30 minutes away, to go ahead and come in. So I got to the hospital at 4:30. My doula was there. She met me there in the entry room. I had a contraction in the parking lot. Was on the, essentially on the ground in the parking lot, trying to even get into the hospital. And at 4:30 in the morning, I was at 4 centimeters. And one thing to note, I asked, and it was part of my birth preferences, I did not want to know my dilation number. And that's kind of important because I honestly don't think I would have survived the length of my labor and how long I had to go through labor with back pain had I known the fact that, which I'll share in a little bit, that I was stalling. I don't think I would have made it as long as I did.
So that first time that they check you, though, did they, you know, now that you were 4 centimeters, but did they tell you then that you were 4 centimeters?
That nurse was not, it was in triage at the hospital. She didn't know. I didn't want to know my number. So she actually said, oh, great, 4 centimeters. We can admit you. And then my doula was like, she actually doesn't want to know her birth number. Please note. Please note in her chart that she does not want to know her number. And so she was great at, like, at that point forward, making sure that no one told me my dilation. I was in triage and she was having to hook me up to the TENS unit and already was doing counter pressure at 4 centimeters. My midwife wanted me to walk the halls to keep labor progressing, and I did. I found that I'm going to tell you my centimeters of dilation, but I actually didn't know them until after I had given birth. At 6:30 in the morning, so 2 hours later, I went from 4 centimeters to 6.5 centimeters, and then at 7-ish in the morning, I was using peanut ball, resting on the bed. That was kind of the first time that I was able to kind of lay on my side, and they were trying to kind of do some positions on the bed to whatever made me feel better. And I was having the TENS unit and counter pressure at that point.
One question I want to ask you about the TENS unit. Was that your own, or was it provided by the hospital? Was it your doula's?
My doula's.
Ah.
And that thing was awesome. I was so thankful to have it. I had it cranked up. It had a manual, like I could control it myself. It was like a lanyard I could wear around my neck. And I was able to bump up the TENS unit. I had the back pain between every contraction, but whenever those contractions hit, it had this like high intensity button I could press. Where it would really kick into gear and she'd do the counter pressure. So that thing was great. And my husband got a little rest with me as much as he could on the bed while I was in the peanut ball. I wasn't resting much, but I was just trying to at least close my eyes and just get through it. 9:30 in the morning, during that time that I was resting with the peanut ball, my doula was inflating my birth tub. I wanted a water birth, and one of the reasons why I also picked that particular midwifery practice was that they had all the right permissions to do water birth at a particular hospital that I chose. That was the only one in the area that allows for water birth.
And that is a unicorn right there.
Yes.
A lot of things have to come together for that even to be possible. So just the fact that you have that option is amazing.
Yeah. And I'm actually very thankful that, you know, I'd listened to podcasts about water birth and I'd done a lot of research on water birth. And you actually have this one podcast with one of your experts that they mentioned having at least 10 pain management techniques, tools available to you during labor. And it could be any 10, but you need to have try to select a place where you know you can get to 10. And that was one of the reasons I picked this particular hospital, because I wanted one of my 10 to be a birth tub, just for pain management. Even if I didn't end up delivering in the tub, I knew how helpful it could be just to have it for position changes and natural pain management. So 9:30 in the morning, I got in the tub and remember telling my doula, like, oh, thank you so much. Like, I was just so thankful just to have it. She brought it. She had the birth tub with her. And it was great. It was probably the only true pain management tool that I really had to help with the back pain between the contractions. And because I was having such a hard time being in any position other than upright, it's padded, cushiony. So I was able to lean up against the wall of the birth tub and just be on my knees in the tub and lean there. And that was essentially the only position that I could tolerate for hours with that back pain. And so that was huge for me to have the tub. I got checked at 10 a.m. by my midwife and because I had done pretty good as far as progressing, I guess, that morning. They decided to do another check. And my midwife gave the infamous phrase of, "You're doing beautifully. We're going to have a baby by lunchtime." And my husband was told, I asked not to know, but he was told, my doula was told that I was in an 8 at that point. And I remember getting excited just by the fact that I saw the clock, that it was 10 a.m. I thought, baby by lunchtime, that's amazing. We're going to, like, I just knowing that he was coming and that also this pain was going to end.
Right. You had a time for that. Infamous last words, I'm guessing.
Yes, infamous last words. I labored a lot in the tub. My doula at that point, because at this point, I mean, I'm really in transition. My doula was having me get out of the tub, in and out of the tub more. I was on the toilet doing some squatting. She was having me kind of hold onto my husband and rock that way, because again, I really wanted to be upright. I did not want to be down. Unfortunately, every time I was out of the water, the back pain was exponentially worse than it was in the water. She wanted me to do different positions. So even in the water, I was trying to do different positions and trying to even just float in the water, like whatever I could do. And we ended up getting back on the bed. I had another check somewhere in there. And at this point, really no position was helping. The back pain was like nothing I could ever describe, honestly. I remember it just essentially yelling, my back. Couldn't have cared less about the contractions. It was just my back that hurt. It was the only thing I cared about because there was no relief ever. There was not a moment of relief. And they knew I was having a really, really difficult labor at this point. Actually, a second midwife that I had been seeing in the practice heard I was having a difficult labor from the midwife on call. So the second midwife actually came in and checked on me as well, and recommended, which I had actually knew about from this podcast, she recommended that maybe we try. She knew I didn't want an epidural. She knew I wanted a natural labor. She said, "Do you want to try saline papules?" And I knew that they would be very painful to do them. Mm-hmm. But I said, nothing could be worse than the back pain that I'm in. And I knew that it was really, the saline papules are only really used for back labor. And they only really numb the back pain.
Yeah. And so it's four little shots, four injections on your, like on your butt, basically on the sides of the crack, off to the little more to the glutes. And it's sterile water injected into your skin. It doesn't go deep. So it creates a little bump, and those are the papules. Mm-hmm. And it works on a gate theory of pain where it just basically shorts all your signaling, going like, this is just way too many intensity, that's too much. I'm crashing. And then all the signaling is supposed to go away. The back labor is supposed to go away for 1 to 2 hours.
Correct.
Was that your experience?
Yes, that was my experience. And I knew that. I knew that that would be the case. What I didn't anticipate is just how intense the pain had to be in order to short circuit your pain signals to make the back pain go away. Mm-hmm. My doula said she thought I was going to come off the bed. And my husband says, I never want to hear you scream like that again in our lives. It was one of the most excruciating things. The most excruciating few seconds of my life.
So here's my question for you, though. Was it worth it?
No.
Okay, yes, there you go.
Yes and no. So no, in the sense that they offered it to me again later in my labor. And I it was so excruciating, I couldn't do it again. So know in that I will probably never do it ever again, no matter what. But yes, it was a good decision in that now I did get relief for about an hour and 15 minutes. And I got into the tub and a contraction hit. Because again, I'm still at this point, by the way, I'm still in an eight. And I've been in an eight since 10 in the morning. This is around two-ish. And a contraction hit. And I remember thinking, oh, thank you, Lord. This is what a contraction feels like. That's all I felt, was just the pain of a contraction. And I was able to go to back to what I planned to do in my labor, which was the deep moaning, the rocking, go deep. I was able to go deep for that hour and really focus on my breathing and the contractions and just go into my contractions versus fighting them. And because I was fighting that back pain so much, whereas contraction pain, I now know the difference, that it felt productive. It felt that way to me. Like, I knew contractions are productive. Back pain is not. So there's a big difference. Mm-hmm. So the problem was that it worked for about an hour and 15 minutes. And about at 3:15, 3:30, the back pain came back. And I felt like it came back with a vengeance. Maybe it was just the fact that I didn't have it for an hour or so, that like I had that relief, that I forgot just how bad it was. But they came back and I thought I was going, I really thought, yep, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the tub for that hour, I thought to myself, I'm good. I can do this. I can have this baby. I could have this water birth like I wanted. I don't need any interventions anymore. I'm good. I'm golden. And they came back and they checked me. And they didn't tell me. Nobody told me I hadn't progressed. But I was still in an eight. And they had figured out essentially at that point that my baby, they didn't tell me this, but my midwives knew that my baby was essentially a little bit transverse, not fully breech, but was transverse somehow in my pelvis. And that was what was causing this severe back labor. And they thought that this also was a reason why I was still stalled at an eight, that the baby just wasn't rotating where it needed to be in order to help me to fully go where I needed to go. And they were hoping that hour in the tub where I had some relief from the back pain would relax me enough to let me dilate fully to get this baby out. And it did not work. I did agree sometime around then to my water bag was bulging, and my midwife asked if I was okay with breaking my water to see if maybe we could move things forward faster. Cause I was having a really hard time at this point. And I agreed. And, unfortunately that didn't work. it didn't help to progress anything like we thought it would. About 3:30, because I was really struggling so badly, they said, do you want to try the nitrous oxide? And I agreed to the nitrous. It helped. Didn't really take away the pain. It helped me slightly care a little less, to where I was actually able to lay on my side for a while, which was huge. Because again, I've been upright for hours on end. It's about 1:30, over 12 hours. So that was helpful in that regard, I guess.
And that's maybe a little bit of what people say in general, and what the research shows, that, you know, the level of pain is about the same, just people don't care. So, yeah.
Yeah. And they were hoping that maybe that would also help me to relax a little bit for me to fully dilate. And they checked me and it didn't work. And I was still in an eight, still no progress. Thank the Lord, truly, that they didn't tell me that I was not progressing, because I think I would have just melted.
And you had no idea you were at an eight. Like, the only thing you heard was when you first get in that you were at a four. So in your mind, you weren't having this idea that you were not progressing and, like, quote unquote, stuck for hours at eight.
Right. I had no idea. I just knew I was in a lot of back pain. That's all that I knew. And all I cared about was doing whatever it took to ease the back pain. And that honestly, that's all I could think about, which is really, I think, probably the most difficult part for me is now looking backward, I wasn't able to go deep the way I needed to, because all I could focus on was the back pain and trying to do whatever it took to get rid of the back pain, ease the back pain. And it wasn't working. And it's all my brain could focus on was that pain. That's not helpful for labor. It's not helpful for progressing. It was at 4:15 that the back pain was so bad that I agreed at this point to a low dosage of an intravenous pain med of Stadol. And I didn't want that at all. Again, I wanted a natural birth. I really did not want the Stadol, but I was getting desperate at that point for the back pain to subside. And they said we could try Stadol or we could do the sterile saline papules again. And I couldn't do the papules. So
my experience with the papules is that nobody has them twice.
No. Yeah. And that's what my midwife said. She's like, I've never had a patient ever do them twice.
They work, so. But it's just, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I did agree to the Stadol, and that was the only bad decision of my labor, honestly. For me, the reaction that I had, which only apparently lasted like 30 minutes, but for me, it felt like an eternity, is that the pain didn't subside at all. I felt every bit of the same amount and intensity of back pain and every contraction. The difference was I felt trapped in my own body, like a dream state, you know, like in dreams where you try to scream and nothing comes out, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I felt like on the Stadol. And I couldn't communicate that it wasn't helping. I just felt very trapped in my own body, which was a terrifying feeling. So apparently it only lasted like 30 minutes, but in my head, it was awful. It wore off. My midwife later told me on discharge that she's like, yeah, we gave you such a low dosage of Stadol because we knew you didn't want the pain med. That it was like cutting off your leg and giving you two Tylenol. She's like, it's just not going to do it enough.
Yeah.
So I agreed at 5:00. I was so desperate at that point that I kind of had a phrase that I said, like, if I really truly was crying uncle and needed to have an epidural, which was like the last thing I wanted, that I would say I really want the big needle, as I have a really big fear of injections, of needles. My husband, I told my husband, I said, I want the big needle. I need the epidural. My midwife and my doula actually said, let's give them a minute to chat. And they kind of stepped out and let my husband and I talk. And he got in my face, because at this point, like, I could only really communicate if somebody was really close to me, making eye contact with me. And he said, are you certain? You said you did not want this epidural. And I said, I know, but just that instinctive, mom mode kicked in. And I said, I know I didn't want it, but I think he needs it. I didn't know why, but I just felt like he needed it. And I'm crying at this point, 'cause it's like, it's not what I wanted. This is not this beautiful flowing birth that I planned, but I knew I needed something. And they agreed. The problem was that because we had the birth tub, the anesthesiologist was ready to go at 5:15 to give me the epidural, but I had to wait from agreeing to it at 5:00. I had to wait 45 minutes because they had to disassemble my birth tub for insurance purposes at this hospital before I could get the epidural. And at that point, I couldn't have the nitrous anymore because I'd already been on the Stadol. So I was just doing position changes on the bed. And they did the epidural at 5:45. I was able to relax and got like a 45 minute, essentially a nap. And I remember texting the biggest reason why I got the epidural, I left that out, was my midwife had said, some point at 4:45, 5 o'clock, she said, there's one last thing we can try. And that would be an epidural. And there was something about it that just that instinctive aspect, I don't know, of that she said there was one last thing we can try. I somehow knew that we were getting close to me maybe having to have a C-section. And I knew beyond anything, I didn't want a C-section. If I could do anything to prevent a C-section, I wanted to prevent it. I wanted to have a vaginal birth. And so, and I feel like, I don't know if it was just kind of God helping to guide me in that regard of needing, we needed to go forward with the epidural, but 45 minutes after getting that epidural, I was checked at 6:30 PM. I had fully dilated to 10 centimeters. My baby had rotated and was in the proper position. We were at what, plus two? I was ready to go. And again, 45 minutes. And my midwife told me later that, you know, sometimes those soft tissues, it's more, and they actually, I think it's, you had an interview, a podcast with an expert that had talked about how important the soft tissues are in addition to the pelvic bones. It's not just about that. Soft tissues matter. That my soft tissues needed to relax in order for him to get to rotate the way he needed to rotate. Spinning babies. You had her on. And she had talked about the soft tissues.
Yeah, and I can think of, she talked about it also, Molly Deutschbein and the structural body changes. Yeah. That relates as well. And then there was the one about can too much exercise affect labor? And it's right. About also that if those soft tissues are too tight, then baby can't, you know, it'll be a harder time. And there's a feedback between the head moving and molding and those soft tissues. So it is an intricate dance. Yes. So that makes total sense to me.
Yeah. And so all it took was 45 minutes of my soft tissues relaxing and me relaxing and resting. And I was ready to go.
And not fighting the contractions and not fighting the back pain, right? Yeah.
Right. Yes. And so my doula, my husband actually at that point, of course, he's been supporting me and Christian throughout my entire labor that's been going on for a very long time at this point. He went outside to get some air and just some fresh air. So Christian, my doula, texted him or called him and said, you should probably get back in here. I think she's going to be getting ready to push. And that was around 6:45. And my midwife had said, you know, we're not in a hurry. You just, when you are ready to push, you let us know. And I think about how we, with that episode with Wapio, about the quietude and about how sometimes you just need some time just to kind of breathe. I think I needed that. And it didn't take long. Honestly, it was like 15 minutes that I just needed to, I knew I was ready to go physically, but I wasn't really ready. I needed a minute. I just rested. I closed my eyes. My husband came in and then I felt, then finally about 7 o'clock, I said, I feel like I want to push. And they said, okay, let's do it. And you know what? It wasn't in the position I thought I wanted to be in. I was actually on my back, which I never thought that I would ever be on my back. I think I had this thought in my head that somehow back labor or being on your back pushing was like this evil thing. Why would anybody do that? But that was where my body kind of wanted to be. I didn't feel like moving to my side. I felt comfortable and that's where I wanted to push. And so my doula held one of my legs and my awesome nurse held my other, and my midwife was there, and I started pushing at 7 PM and I kept pushing. And at 8 4:40 p.m., I saw out of the blinds vaguely that there was some pink coming through, and I said, "Can we open those blinds? I think there's a sunset. Can I look at the sunset while I'm pushing?" Because it had been over an hour and a half of pushing, and still not really making a lot of progress. And so we opened the blinds, and I saw that gorgeous sunset, and I felt kind of refreshed. They gave me, I brought some snacks, and I had a honey stick just to kind of give me some energy. And I kept pushing. And at one point in that pushing phase, my midwife said, "Okay, Emery, I see his head is right here. He hasn't been making progress with these pushes. You are pushing beautifully, exactly how I want you to. So the issue is that he's stuck on your hymenal ring." And I went, "What? Did you say hymen?" And I said, "I've been married a long time. I don't think that that's possible." And she said, "Yeah, it is. He's stuck on your hymen. And if I clip your hymen, I think I can save your perineum. Because if what's probably going to happen is you will push him. He will bust through the hymenal ring. And I think you're going to tear with such force of him coming through the hymen very quickly. I think you're going to tear." She said, "I think I can save your perineum if you let me just do a minor snip of your hymen." And I said, "Whatever, just do it. If you can try to save me from tearing, let's try it." And I actually, after having my son, saw there's actually a wonderful explanation of birth with an intact hymenal ring on spinning babies that was so helpful for me to clarify what happened during my labor. And it's exactly what my midwife did. And by clipping it, she did save my perineum. I didn't tear at all. I actually pushed until 10:50 p.m. So 7 o'clock until 10:50, I was pushing. But he finally came out after she clipped that hymenal ring. And I didn't tear at all, had some issues a little bit with like hemorrhoids afterwards just from pushing for so long, but it wasn't severe. And he was perfect, absolutely perfect baby. Put him on my chest immediately, started like making his little kind of minor cry sounds immediately. He was just this perfect little guy. And I actually got to cut his cord, which is really cool. She asked my husband if he wanted to cut the cord, and my husband said, "No, that's okay," which I was fine with. But I didn't anticipate her looking to me and saying, "Do you want to?" I said, "Yeah, of course I do." So I cut the umbilical cord after it had stopped pulsing. It was just it was in that moment of having him there on my chest that, despite the interventions, despite kind of my birth plan going out the window, it was this realization of, I did this. I pushed you out. You're here. You're healthy. I grew you. How my body did this. And you're here. And just that overwhelming feeling of, it was so healing. So healing for me that my body could do it. So yeah.
Oh my god, and you sure did it, right? Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I always want to say, like, reassure and reinforce the fact that you may have plans, but then birth does its own thing.
Yeah.
And circumstances are huge. Like, there's no way for you back when, wherever you said, "I want a, you know, non-medicated birth," that you were thinking, "I want a non-medicated birth," even with excruciating, non-stopping back pain. Right. Like, those two things weren't a consideration. So there's no right or wrong. There's no medals. It's just however it needs to happen for you. Yeah. And I feel that intuition that you kept holding in, and it was almost a birth taking you to your edge and taking you and going like, okay, here's what we're gonna do now, Anne-Marie, and let's push you a little bit more.
And you know, it was actually on discharge, I was talking to the discharge midwife, and she said, honestly, Anne-Marie, had you not gotten that epidural, she said, you would have ended up in an OR. She said, you were heading there. I've done this long enough to know you were at an 8 for since 10 in the morning, and you got the epidural at 5:45. You were at an 8 that long. She's like, you weren't making any progress. And he was transverse, and he needed that from you. And you allowed your body, you gave your body what it needed for your son to come into the world in the way you wanted him to.
And that's a great example of an epidural being a tool.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's one tool, a tool I didn't want to use, but it was ended up what I needed it to be. So I'm so thankful. I really feel like I took some time to process, obviously. My doula came afterwards, but within the week to check in and come to the house and debrief, right, on my labor. And that was really good for me because I was able to get some details of what happened. During this labor, and also debrief with my midwife on discharge, where I was able to find out just the details of where I was stuck at 8 centimeters and what was going on with my baby. I didn't know he was transverse. I just knew it was taking a long time. I didn't know why, and that I was in a lot of back pain. And that was it. So just knowing that, you know what, my body, I might not have been able to create, quote unquote, my son on my own. I might not have been able to carry my first child to birth. One day I'll meet my first child again in heaven. I believe that. But my body wasn't broken. It's not broken. I was able to grow this beautiful boy and deliver him vaginally. I survived a excruciating labor. My midwife said this was an atypical labor, that you will never go through this type of labor ever again. very atypical labor. I pushed him for almost 4 hours. I was in 28 hours of labor, and I did it with my body. And there's something just so healing about that, that I don't feel that sense of brokenness anymore. Which is huge.
So huge. And I am thrilled that you've gotten to that point of processing everything and you know, owning your story.
Yeah.
Knowing that because it's nobody else's, it's yours.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
A little bit of embracing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, I always say that God knew exactly how my son would come into the world. He chose not to share that with me in advance. And I'm very thankful that he did. Now, I don't think I could have gone through it. But it was what he needed.
A question I have for you. When you found out that you, because you had no idea that you'd been at 8 centimeters since, you know, the morning until 5:30 in the afternoon. When you found that out, what did you think?
Oh, my jaw dropped. I was like, you have, but people are supposed to be in transition at that point. I thought that was only supposed to last like an hour and that's it. And my doula was like, yeah, you're a rock star. She's like, you, and you know what? I felt like a rock star whenever I found out just how long I was at 8 centimeters and in that much pain, that I was able to hold out that long before really having to go to more drastic measures. I felt it was very empowering. It really was the best way I could say it. It was my jaw dropped in that I couldn't believe that I could stay there for that long, but also the fact that I was able to hold out that long. I really felt it was just an empowering experience.
Birthing people are amazing. I say it, like I see it, I hear it, I all the time. It is a magnificent honor to watch and listen to the stories. So thank you. Thank you so very much for sharing all of this with us.
Thank you for letting me share it from start to finish.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And don't forget to join us next Thursday, December 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Birthful's Facebook page for a Facebook Live announcement of our five-year celebration. There will be lots of details and giveaways. It will take place at facebook.com/birthful. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and by the wonderful people at Storyworth and Causebox. Go to storyworth.com/birthful for $20 off your first purchase, and go to causebox.com and use the code birthful30 to get 30% off your first box. The title song for this podcast is Vivace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. Oh, and here's what Anne-Marie didn't have for breakfast.
You know, I actually forgot to eat breakfast today. So I should eat something after this call.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Lozada.